Good morning, everyone. It's great to be here. And I'd like to start by acknowledging the Gunnawal people as the traditional custodians of the land on which we are meeting, and pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledging the long, long history of governance and leadership that they have exercised with their respective Indigenous communities. I'm so excited to be here. I think when Kylie first reached out to me, I don't think she realised that I'm a bit of a governance nerd. So I was really excited. Excited to be here, but also excited that actually to hear that, you know, the department is working so closely with the sector in this way and putting Quality Area 7 and leadership and governance up front and centre. And how good is it to see you all here today? I'm so busy. So it's fantastic that you're here today. So Sean gave a little introduction about who I am, but I'd just like to tell you two more things about me, just to sort of set the scene for this morning. I'm actually a social worker. I have a social work background, and I discovered a passion for governance and leadership years and years ago when I was in my 20s, so not that many years ago, working at Cassia Neighbourhood Centre, and it was in an area of disadvantage, working with families and young children. And I started in this role, and I sort of kept thinking, how were decisions made here? I could see the good things that were happening at the service, and there was a fantastic parent management committee there. But I sort of had this sort of niggling feeling that things were a bit sort of ad hoc and it needed a structure. And maybe it reflects a bit about my personality that I like a bit of structure. But I took myself off to do a master's in community management, and over a course of a number of years worked with the management committee and developed a strategic plan, developed a marketing plan, developed a whole policy and procedures manual. It was one of the best summers of my life. and we found that it brought us together, and we found ourselves on a road to providing quality for it wasn't early childhood education and care, it was a community development service, but I felt like we were really on a journey together and impacting change at the local level. So it was a really, really satisfying experience. Another story, a more recent one about who I am and my passion for governance. I'm a West Tigers girl. Anyone else happen to? I know. Do we have some? I know. It's sad. For those of you who don't know, the last time the West Tigers made the semi-finals was in 2011. And don't talk about the 89 grand final that involved the Canberra Raiders, my Tigers, and a lot of tears. But I raised the Tigers because I love my team. But as I said, it's been over a decade since we have been in the finals. And time and over and over and over, I read stories like this. At the moment, there's no accountability. The Tigers hierarchy is under pressure to improve. And the headlines go, the board needs to go, the CEO needs to go. There's problems with the culture. You'd never see what's going on at the West Tigers happening in other more successful clubs. And I'm really interested in that portrayal of the club because I think it speaks volumes about how, yes, the players on the field have a responsibility for the performance of the club, but the contributors to that performance go much deeper to the governance and leadership. And I'll refer a bit more to that as we progress. So that's just a little introduction. But over the next hour, what I hope to do is propose to you that good governance is a critical and often overlooked driver of quality in early childhood education and care. Yes, it's in Quality Area 7, but we know that that's one of the quality areas that services most struggle with in following Quality Area 1. I want to invite you to consider what good governance means, why it matters, and how you can be meeting your governance responsibilities in ways that enable your service, your staff, and your children to flourish. So that's what I hope to do today. So can, just to get a sense of who's in the room, who do we have providers here? Some? Okay, fantastic. And do we have service coordinators, directors? Yeah, most of them. Okay, so this is relevant. The presentation is relevant for both of you. So what I hope to do is most of the presentation will cover an introduction to what is governance. I really want to unpack that because I don't think it's this thing about ticking the box for quality area 7. So what is governance, why it matters, and we heard a little bit about that from Sean already. Talk about governance in context here in the ACT. Six governance responsibilities, and I'm going to particularly spend a lot of time on vision, mission and values, and you're probably going, oh my gosh, she's not going to finish, it's 10 to 10 and we're only on slide 15. But it's important, I'm doing that deliberately. And then, of course, where to from here, and then that'll feed nicely into Amanda's talk after morning tea. So what is governance? If we look at how governance is conceptualised or explained in the Guide to the National Quality Framework, it says governance is the systems in place to support effective management and operation of the service, consistent with the service's statement of philosophy. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read that, I sort of feel a little bit flat. It doesn't inspire me. It doesn't really energise me. And I think about when the students I teach at Sydney and they come and do my management and leadership courses, and I know many of them come and going, oh, my gosh, do we have to do this dry subject? Why can't we be doing more curriculum units? And it's my goal to sort of inspire them to think and be passionate about governance, because no matter how good a teacher they are, the quality of their teaching is going to be impacted by the quality of the governance of that service. So you service coordinators and directors in the room, it's really important that you understand what governance is and how you can work with it. I love my CEQA colleagues. I have the most utmost respect, but I'd love to get in there and address quality area 7. For me, this definition is pretty passive as well as dull. It's, oh, the systems, they're already in place. It's like this one-off action. We put in these systems and they'll then flow on to effective management and operation of the service. There's the word management there, but there's nothing about leadership there. And management is more about sort of the here and now, day to day. Leadership, as Sean alluded to, is moving forward, quality improvement, taking your service into the future. There's also nothing about quality. So it's about effective management and operation, but I'd love to see quality embedded in the definition. So I want you to try and think about how you think about governance and take into account those ideas. So two other key concepts to think about when it comes to governance are firstly this idea of authority. So rather than governance being this sort of passive or something that just happens, governance is about who has formal authority. So it's the formal authority and accountability arrangements established within an organisation. So who has the formal authority to do that? Who has the power? And generally when we talk about authority in relation to governance, we're talking about legitimate power. So ideally, people with knowledge and expertise. And so that, whether you as the service director, coordinator, have been delegated a lot of governing responsibilities, whether you feel like, oh my gosh, I have these responsibilities but I don't really feel equipped, that's something that I think Amanda will be picking up in her talk. So it's important that authority is legitimate. It's important that authority be exercised to take the organisation forward. The second idea is steering. So the word governance actually is derived from a Greek word which means to steer. So again, that idea of it's moving forward. It's not just achieving the here and now. It's moving in a direction. And in relation to ECEC, that direction is about quality improvement. So if we're thinking about steering a service, it's the exercising of authority or formal power to guide, to manage, to distribute resources, to keep accountable an organisation so that it meets its purposes and it provides that quality early childhood education and care for young children. So I've sort of touched on, and I think Sean did too, as to why good governance matters. Hopefully you've been picking up on that as I've been speaking. A lot of the business and management literature talk about governance in relation to, you know, the service being viable and sustainable, and there's no question that that's really critical. My presentation today is going to focus more on good governance as a support, an integral support for quality. And it was really pleasing to see when the National Quality Standards were revised, that Quality Area 7 changed from leadership and service management to governance and leadership. Because responsibility for quality doesn't just rest with you if you're a service coordinator or you're an educator or you're a teacher. Fundamental to quality is what the governing body does. So I'll talk a bit more about that, and that's where I was alluding to my West Tigers. We can't just look at the players on the field. We need to think about what's going on, and wouldn't I like to get in there and find out? Some of you may be aware of an investigating quality study. Has anyone heard of that? It was conducted in a report was published in 2019. The research was conducted by Macquarie University, QUT, and Queensland University of Technology, and Edith Cowan. And they did a three-phase study looking at what is it that enables services to improve their quality rating from working towards to meeting or exceeding in a subsequent rating. And they looked at particularly services that improved or didn't improve their rating in terms of Quality Area 1 and Quality Area 7. And one of the findings of the study was that a service's governance is critical to genuine and sustained quality improvement. So for you as coordinators and leaders, it's critical that you work with your governing body and providers, that you work with your service leaders to enable that to happen. I think I'm speaking to the converted here, that, you know, when we talk about quality, I think we're all here, I would hope, for the same thing. We're here for children and we're here for good outcomes for families. But sometimes I think that staff get a bit lost when we talk about quality for children, and that's obviously important. But I think when we think about quality, we need to think about the well-being and professional development of our staff, particularly post-COVID. I think that was brought to light during the COVID period. Okay, a little diagram about quality in early childhood education and care. I throw around a lot of images and metaphors in this presentation. The next one is we think about the early childhood service as a tree. And if we think about a tree, often we focus on the visible. So we focus on the beautiful leaves and the flowers. And in relation to early childhood education, that's around process quality. So process quality is about what are the contributors to how children experience your service and how they interact with staff at the service, with the resources and so on. So process contributors are things like how stimulating and engaging and child-centred is your curriculum. Do you adopt a child rights focus? Are your interactions with children warm and engaging and respectful? Okay, so they're sort of the visible experiential contributors. Underpinning those are the structural contributors. So your service will be meeting those by focusing on the contributors that are measurable and generally that are amenable to regulation. So things like staff qualifications, ratios and group size are the common ones. So the structural contributors generally, or if we're thinking about the NQS, focus on quality areas 2, 3 and 4. The process contributors, quality areas 1, 5 and 6. Now, what about quality area 7? If we think about governance and leadership, it's not obviously visible. We, child and families often don't think about governance and leadership. But I use the metaphor of a tree because if we think about how is a tree going to thrive, well, it needs the roots to get water and nutrients from the soil. And if the roots are getting nutrients and water from the soil, they will feed that through the trunk and the branches and the structural and the process aspects of your service. So the roots of the tree, the governance and the leadership is absolutely critical. And I would suggest to you, as if you're a service coordinator and leader, it's hard for your service to thrive and flourish if the roots of your service, if the governance and leadership is not doing what it's meant to be doing. Okay, so that's sort of setting the scene. Just a little bit of context, and I'm not sure if you already are familiar with this. So just a quick recap of how governance can be operationalised or how governance can be put into practice. And it depends. There's so much diversity in the sector, and we see that in the next few slides. There's diversity in terms of service type. So I know most of you here today are from long day care and out of school hours care. Some of you, I think, also from preschool and family daycare. We know that governance will also vary depending on the management type. So it's important to think about, well, what management structure does your service operate under? If you're long day care, 2/3 of long day care services are operated by private for-profit providers. Out-of-school hours care, about half. Family daycare, 60%. Preschools, about 50. You can see quite a stark contrast in preschools and kindergartens. And my understanding is that in the ACT, historically, the provisioning traditionally has been not-for-profit, but there's a shift in the ACT landscape with more for-profit provisioning. Governance, the way governance is exercised in an organisation is also going to vary or depending on the provider size and the service size. So the top slide shows, this is national data, not ACT specific data. The top slide talks about the proportion of providers in the sector. So you can see here, often we hear about Good Start and I'm having a brain moment with, what's the biggest, Guardian G8. A lot of these providers, they constitute 1% of providers in the sector. Most providers operate one service, so they're standalone services. So a much greater weight of responsibility on the board or parent committees operating those standalone services. Similarly, if we look at the second graph, the second table, that's about the proportion of services in the sector that are governed by a small, medium or large provider. And we can see that there's an equal, fairly even distribution there. And then, of course, the way governance is exercised in a service is going to depend on how big the service actually is, how many places you're licensed for, and therefore how many staff you have and what their qualifications is like. So all of this has implications for quality, the governing body, and for service leaders. In the investigating quality study that I mentioned before, they found a few patterns in services that did improve their NQS ratings from in quality area 7. They found that they tended to be the larger providers, they tended to be the larger services, and they tended to be services where the ownership was consistent. Now, I don't think this means, you know, that all is dire if you're a small standalone service, but it raises questions about how might governance be operationalised in a way that can support quality improvement. So there are questions for the governing body and the service director in terms of how they exercise authority, how they work together, and how you actually meet quality area 7. So we'll talk a bit more about that, and then I know Amanda's going to cover that in more detail in the talk after morning tea. Just a quick snapshot of how the ACT is faring in terms of quality. And we see there that 40% of services are rated as exceeding, and about just over a third are rated as meeting. So my view is it doesn't matter what your quality rating is. There is always, as a governing body, your sort of focus should be on moving forward, steering for quality improvement. So if you're a service provider, what are or could you be doing to support quality improvement? If you're a service leader, in what ways or are you or could you be working with the governing body to support quality improvement? Okay. So they're just figures around the different quality areas, and you can see in terms of quality area 7, it's in one of the quality areas that services most struggle with, although the ACT is not faring too badly, actually. Okay, how do we operationalise governance? How does it work in practice on a day-to-day level in your service? Now, I'm going to start with big picture stuff, and you'll see by the end of, hopefully by the end of this talk, why I'm starting here. I don't know whether you're a single standalone out-of-school service and you're thinking, oh my gosh, vision, mission and values, that is so not what I'm about. That is for the bigger providers. It's like I can only do so much. I want you to try and bear with me and hold that sort of and be open to thinking about how these ideas of vision, mission and values might enable you to be on a course of quality improvement. So when we're talking about a vision, we're talking about a statement that reflects an aspirational future, where you want the organisation to go, what you want it to achieve in big picture terms. If we're talking about a mission, it's the narrow, what's your purpose? Why are you here? Okay, a well-defined purpose. And then, of course, the values. What is it that you hold dear? I wonder if you've ever done a values data bank where, I know you all have your service philosophy, but whether you've actually sat back and thought, what is it that we really, really hold dear? And good services, and this came out of the investigating quality study, good services that are performing well do that. I want you to close your eyes for a moment. I'm not going to do anything. I'm still going to talk. I'm going to read out a vision and a mission statement, and I just want you to sit back and not write and just listen. So just close your eyes. This is a vision from Gowrie, New South Wales. Their vision is that children are active participants in society. Their voices are heard, and they are empowered to make a positive contribution in their community and make a difference in their world. I'm now going to read the mission statement of Orange Education and Recreation Services. To provide a safe, nurturing, an engaging early learning environment that effectively supports the diverse needs of children and families in our community and creates a foundation for children to be able to enter kindergarten as a lifelong learner and a critically thinking citizen. You can open your eyes now. I asked you to close your eyes because I think when we stop and focus on vision and mission statements like that, that capture values very clearly, I don't know about you, but that's when I start to feel excited. It's not when I look at Quality Area 7, because Quality Area 7, another change I would make, doesn't talk about vision. And I think an organisation, no matter how small you are, needs to have a vision. If we think about governance as steering, where are you steering to? Where are you going? Or are you just sort of going from one element to the other and not really having any sort of clear focus? So I remember years ago when I was at Macquarie University and we were going to have a full day on strategic planning. And I remember a colleague going, oh, what a waste of time. And it's pleasing to see you all here today because I'm hoping that means you don't think governance, thinking about governance and thinking about hopefully vision, mission and values is a waste of time, because I think when done meaningfully, it creates a course on which everything that you do follows. So it's a guide for decision making. We have a curriculum framework that talks a lot about belonging. What about belonging as staff and families and children to the organisation? And I think a clear and I think genuine vision, mission and philosophy, which captures your service values, that can act as a real glue that can attract, you know, high quality staff, keep them there and unites those who work in and use the service. I think it can sort of generate a real energy around what's being done because there's a bigger picture, not just the day-to-day stuff. Gillian Rodd, who's a renowned writer of early childhood leadership, she talks about how vision, mission and values provide direction and sustains action. I love that. And I think that's from my experience at Cassia Neighbourhood Centre to the work I've done with services, early childhood services, the really high-performing ones, I've seen that in practice. So it's worth spending time on. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about the philosophy because I think that's something you are all familiar with. So the philosophy should be the embodiment of what you value. And ideally, I'd love to see philosophy statements start with your vision and your mission and then talk about your philosophy, because the philosophy should be tied to your vision and mission. Okay. Now, we have the grand vision, mission and philosophy. What do we do with that? So if you're a service leader or a provider, what would be great to do is start planning. How can you actually go about achieving your vision, mission and values? The literature talks about three types of planning. Now, I imagine most of you would focus on the third one up the top, the improvement planning. You all have to do a quality improvement plan or, you know, look at the improvement of your service, whether it's OOSH, long day care, whatever. All of you have to do an improvement plan. But I would suggest to you that it's really, really important to start with a strategic plan because it's all very well to have a mission, vision and mission, but it's important to they need to be planned for and to have evaluation measures put in place to see how the service is faring in terms of its direction and purpose. So strategic planning is medium to long-term planning, 3 to 5 years. Operational planning is shorter planning, 1 to 3 years. And then your improvement planning is even more focused and sort of short term. Now, you might be thinking, we all know that there's a high turnover in the early childhood education workforce. I don't know what turnover is like in your respective services. So you might be thinking, how on earth can we even think about a 5-year plan when it's so hard keeping staff? That says to me all the more important to do a strategic plan, because a strategic plan shouldn't be dependent on the people in the service as such, or it shouldn't be dependent, or things shouldn't fall apart when a parent body or a board changes its membership. So I think a strategic plan is really critical when there is high turnover, because again, it provides that sort of sense of direction. The quality improvement study, again, found that services where quality improved, where the services... Oh, so this is just in relation to the improvement planning. And so I don't want to say improvement planning is not important, because of course it is. But and the investigating quality study found that the services who were able to shift their quality ratings from working towards to exceeding were the services where the approved provider gave the service leaders, so the centre coordinator or director and the educational leader, time to plan, time to meet with staff, time to engage in professional development. Essentially what they were doing was investing in building capability across the service. Okay. So again, thinking back to the roots, it's about building capability at that foundational level. But also educators were given time to plan for their program and reflect on their program and undertake the assessment and planning cycle. And they were given release from face-to-face teaching. All these enablers, it's all very well to talk about, yes, let's improve our planning, but obviously planning needs to be resourced. Okay. Has anyone heard of a SWOT analysis? Yay! A few of you have. Excellent. This is something I think can be done irrespective of whether you're looking at improvement planning, operational planning, or strategic planning. What a SWOT analysis does, it analyses the internal strengths and weaknesses of a service and the external opportunities and threats. Okay, I should have said these slides are going to be available, aren't they, Kylie? Yeah. So when you're thinking about conducting a plan, the first thing you need to do is actually evaluate how well are you going, what's working well, what's not working well. So thinking about what's happening within your service, what are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? What's holding the service back? What's enabling it to move forward? So there needs to be an evaluation of the governance, of the staffing, of leadership, of the service's reputation, of its financial position, of its culture. At the start, Sean talked about all the incredible changes that are happening in the policy landscape. And that fits into the bottom row of a SWOT analysis in terms of what's happening in the external space outside of the organisation, but nonetheless affects how well the organisation is doing. So all of those policy changes that Sean talked about, you may experience those as opportunities, or you may experience them as threats. So it's important that you engage not just what's happening within your service, but what's happening external to your service. Who's going to do all of this work? Are you exhausted yet just by me talking? Let alone you haven't even got out the door and doing any of this stuff. Or some of you, I hope, are already doing this stuff. But ideally, again, it comes back to that idea of authority and whether if and how the provider takes responsibility for this work, Or do they delegate authority to a planning team and bring on board the service leaders, some families, and get consultation with children? Who's going to do this work? Again, the message is this work requires resourcing. Service leaders and coordinators can't do this stuff on their own. They need designated time and support to do it. When you're setting goals, this also applies if you're doing your quality improvement plan. Sometimes I see goals that are really, really general. They sort of sound good, but they're a bit out there. I can't quite work out what is it that you want to achieve. So whether you're setting strategic, operational, or improvement goals, they need to be SMART. They need to be really specific and clear and detailed, fine-grained goals. They need to be measurable so that you know whether you've achieved them or not. And again, thinking about the governance as an opportunity to create glue that brings everyone together. When you can see that goals are being achieved, how fantastic is that? And when you acknowledge your staff, you know, well done. So having measurable goals is important, but they also need to be achievable. The worst thing in the world is setting goals where you're setting yourself or you're setting others up to fail. So if you're a governing, if you're a provider and you're saying, come on, everyone, we need to get to exceeding by the next assessment and rating, if you don't resource your team, and particularly your leaders, then I'm not sure how achievable that goal is going to be. The goals obviously need to be relevant, and I suggest relevant to that vision, mission, values, and also time-bound. By when are you going to achieve these things? Okay. So obviously a key message of what I'm saying is that a part of your SWOT evaluation and goal planning will be focused on improving the quality of your service and reflecting on how well you're doing in relation to the 7 quality areas is really important. But consider also evaluating your service and planning for your service in terms of governance and leadership. And these factors here were identified in the investigating quality study, again, that looked at those long day care services that jumped in their ratings from working towards to exceeding. There was a lot of focus on staffing. And I know we have quality area 4, but this was a real intentionality around supporting your staff, ensuring that, you know, there's professional development, there's job satisfaction, you're retaining your staff, that you invest in your educational leaders. And that study did show that quality tended to improve more when the educational leader was an ECT. Build leadership capacity. I've talked a lot about that. Ongoing and meaningful professional development, not just the technical training on first aid, which, of course, you know, that's really, really important, but professional development that's going to help move the direction forward, not just ensure the day-to-day management. How do you create supportive work environments? Do you have a clear purpose? And Sean talked about the early years workforce strategy. The workforce strategy talks about how the achieving of those 6 areas that Sean mentioned, it's a whole of sector responsibility. It's not just something governments need to do. Individual services also have a role to play. So when you're doing your evaluation and planning and in relation to governance and leadership, what are you doing and what might you plan for in terms of professional recognition, attraction and retention, leadership capacity, well-being, qualifications and career pathways? So just to finish this bit, I've mentioned the NQS, but I haven't talked in detail about the NQS, and I've done that deliberately because my heart sinks when I hear services go, tell me, how can I achieve an exceeding rating? No. good governance, that's not your starting point. So what I suggest to you, and I hope you've got by now, is that good governance starts with a clear vision, mission and values. That's operationalised in long and shorter term plans. It involves evaluations. And then, of course, that's how you use the National Quality Standard to inform your journey on that path. Your end goal, I would hope, is not to get the exceeding rating. That should be the outcome of your goal to provide quality early childhood education and care, or whatever your vision is. You may not agree with that. Happy to take questions on that when we have the forum. Okay, so I told you that we're on slide 21, so that's okay. So I'm going to just quickly talk through the other governance areas, and the second one is about compliance and accountability. So some three key ideas I just wanted to emphasise with this. We know services have a myriad of compliance requirements, legal requirements, financial requirements, industrial requirements, operational requirements, and they are all really, really important. I'd love you to think about accountabilities beyond compliance in terms of an accountability to a vision that you have for the children and families using your service and to the staff working at your service. So think about accountabilities a bit more broadly. It could be in how you act with integrity in accordance with your vision, mission and values. The second idea is around internal and external stakeholders. Often when we think about compliance and accountabilities, we're thinking about beyond the service, a CEQA or the ACT, Department of Education, or whoever the legal body is. But let's not forget, our primary accountability is to the children and families that are using our service. And I would suggest close behind, if not alongside, is your staff. The third key idea is what I sort of mentioned before around, well, who does all this stuff? Is it something that a provider can just delegate to the service leaders? Again, it depends, going back to all those diversity slides that I was talking about before. What is clear from the literature and the investigating quality study is that governance and leadership is a shared responsibility. It's not something that just the provider does. It's not something that service leaders does. It's something that they must work together doing and bringing in other staff on board as well. And remembering that idea of resourcing and capacity building. Does anyone know what this animal is? Pufferfish. I didn't know about pufferfish until my daughter, I think in about year two or three, she did a paper mache of a pufferfish. Interesting animal. A pufferfish, so are renowned for being quite slow and clumsy. So they're vulnerable to dangers in the external environment. But how amazing in that pufferfish are equipped to ingest a lot of water when they're under threat, so that they turn themselves into a virtual inedible ball that's sometimes several times their original size. And some pufferfish also can generate spines on their skin, so it makes it more difficult to be eaten, and they're less vulnerable in their environment. My question to you is, are you a pufferfish? By that I mean thinking about your service leadership and governance, would you describe it as slow and clumsy? Or, because a pufferfish, if you think about it, they're quite reactive to the external environment. But if we're going to be thinking about risk and what's happening in the external environment, we need to be more agile. We need to get in shape. We need to get that leadership and governance in shape so that we're ready, okay? And we're not just reacting, okay? I understand that there are potential risks in the ACT workforce sector, staff shortages, lower than average workforce experience, lower than average qualification levels, board turnover, so changes in the governance, and also increasing market competitiveness. So when I talk about being more agile, it comes back to that SWOT analysis and being attuned to what's going on in the external space and how you might build capability to manage those risks. Okay. The fourth idea, clear operational structure. Sometimes I hear that, you know, there's this sort of a bit confusion around who's meant to be doing what, who's responsible for what. No, you're the provider. I'm not paid to do that. So there needs to be a clear operational structure with clear position titles with specific responsibilities. That's just a very basic thing all services can go back and look on. And that idea of governance being about authority and delegating authority, yes, delegate responsibility, but let's also make sure that what goes hand in hand with that is supporting and building capacity as well. Policies and procedures, I'm not going to speak too much on that. I think you're all au fait about policies and procedures in terms of, you know, these are the real nuts and bolts that put into action those three plans on a day-to-day basis. In terms of helping you achieve what you want to achieve, clear policies are really critical. And the final area of governance and leadership is working ethically. I love this idea that good governance is about achieving desired results and achieving them in the right way. So what does that mean? What does it mean to work ethically? I think sometimes we often think about the code of ethics as being just for educators, but it's also for providers, okay? So how providers work, but also how providers lead the organisation in ways that meets that code's commitments to families and children and the profession. So if you're going to be evaluating how well your governance is doing, that's something to think about. Fiduciary duty, acting in the best interests of the organisation, in good faith and not for personal gain. And that can be a really tricky one when sometimes I know some of you will have parents on a committee making decisions and they have their children there, so they're parent users as well. So there's potential for a conflict of interest. And that's where the next element is really important, transparency. If you have clear policies and procedures to guide decision making, you have your vision, mission and values, then there's greater scope to be transparent in the decisions that are made. And all decisions made should hold up to public scrutiny. Duty of care. Again, we often think about duty of care in terms of keeping children safe, and absolutely we should. But let's also extend that to the safety and well-being of our staff. Again, that there's a lot of research even before COVID, but it's really accelerated since COVID, around the well-being of staff. And you all know this. If staff are not satisfied, they don't feel acknowledged, they're exhausted, they're on the brink of burnout, they're not going to do that process quality stuff that I mentioned before. So duty of care to children, families and staff. And the last one, obviously, involving children and families in decision making and all of your planning processes. So where to from here? I really hope that this coming to this forum today will be, and this presentation will be, something that you might be able to continue the conversation about when you go back to your respective services. You may already be talking about this stuff, which I hope you are, and I hope some of the things I've spoken about might help you in that journey. But with any professional development or forum that you go to, I hope you don't leave what you've heard here at the door, but you take it and enact it. And how might you do that? So, conduct a temperature check in terms of how your service is going. So we often think, okay, let's evaluate and check the temperature on the 7 quality areas. And I would say yes, and especially in regards to quality area 7, and especially in regards to your vision, mission and values. Build leadership capacity, starting at the roots. Yes, we need to support educators, critical, but let's also not forget building capacity at the roots with governance and leadership. And in terms of service leaders, the director or coordinator and the educational leader. Develop or review, if you've already got one, a strategic plan for your service. And then from that, do an operational plan and then look at your quality improvement planning in light of that. And then finally, draw on available resources and supports. So Amanda's going to follow after morning tea. What a fabulous resource you've got right here in the room. And as you're probably already aware, ASEQA has a whole myriad of resources on governance and leadership on their website, and they're really, really accessible. A plug for 2 publications, hot off the press, coming your way, is the 3rd edition of Leadership Context and Complexities, and that's for, this book is for service providers and service leaders. So that will be published end of July. And is Betty in the room? There you are. Betty actually has contributed to the book, and Betty, in a practitioner profile, Betty talks about her journey from working towards and improving her services quality rating. So thank you, Betty. I must see you in the break. professional communication for early childhood educators. This stuff can be quite challenging, and there can be tensions, there's a lot of change, there's a lot of decisions to make, and this book talks about interpersonal and workplace communication, so that may also be helpful. There are also organisations, Community Early Learning Australia has a lot of online stuff, Community Connections Solutions, some of you may already be working with Meg from CCSA. Meg does a lot of work directly with providers, so she can help you through all the stuff that I have spoken about today. Okay, so I think that's it to time. And so thank you so much again for coming today. I hope that was useful.
Thank you so much, Marianne. That was an amazing presentation, and have so many things to take away and to think about. As a gardener, I particularly loved your tree and was really thinking about how it's so important to invest in the root system. I've just planted some bare root plants in my garden, and so how, you know, it was really important to prune them and to well feed them so that when spring comes, they'll blossom and look beautiful. So there was so many things. Just a few notes that I wrote down, that leadership is about moving forward and about quality improvement and continuous improvement, and it's the forward projection. That governance is exercising authority and steering, and I loved how you used the steering wheel to think about how we want to go forward, and also about that improving. So it's not just about considering what we're currently improving on, but investing in the strategy and the forward thinking of that operational plan and moving forward. So thank you so much. Lots to think about. I think we have to rewatch this and listen to it many, many times. But also there's some things that we can take away in terms of quality area 7 and maybe things for the next national quality framework review as well.